This is an iHeart podcast.
This appropriations thing, what is happening? What's the latest and greatest on that? We'll talk about that. We're going to talk about guns tonight. We're going to discuss voting integrity, election integrity. All that's coming up on I'm Right. Have you ever wondered why all these people are millionaires? The politicians, I mean. The people in Congress. And I'm not trying to do the simplistic thing we've all done. Why are there so many millionaires? But have you ever actually sat and thought about it? Why? And I don't mean basic millionaire stuff. Not that I'm dismissing being a millionaire. But, okay, so they make 160, 165 grand a year. That's obviously amazing money. It's great money. And if you're making 165 grand a year, you should be able to set aside, I don't know, 5, 10% a year, I would hope, stash away enough income that you'll eventually be a millionaire. So that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about $50 million. A congressman, a senator worth $50 million, $100 million, even $15, $20 million. How does one get to be worth $15, $20 million when you're in Congress making 165 grand a year? Well, it's important we ask that question because the answer to that question always comes down to this, and we don't think about it and we don't talk about it. They get to that level of wealth because what they're selling is your money. These people take in your money, your tax money, and they give it away to various people, entities at home and abroad. And they understand that that money they put out, your money that they've stolen from you and hand to others, they understand that that money will come back to them. Campaign donations, cushy jobs for money, for wives, girlfriends, children, themselves when they retire. This is how it works out. I saw this report about Ukraine. And this is a report, you've probably seen this little video clip already, but did you see this little video clip about Ukraine?
American taxpayers are financing more than just weapons. We discovered the US government's buying seeds and fertilizer for Ukrainian farmers and covering the salaries of Ukraine's first responders, all 57,000 of them. Russia's invasion shrank Ukraine's economy by about a third. We were surprised to find that to keep it afloat, the US government is subsidizing small businesses.
Super.
Like Tatiana Abramova's knitwear company. In total, America's pumped nearly $25 billion of non-military aid into Ukraine's economy since the invasion began. And you can see it working at the bustling farmers market on John McCain Street in central Kyiv.
Your money. Taken from you, given to some little boutique shop in Ukraine while you struggle to pay for groceries. So back to what we were talking about. How are all of these people so wealthy? Well, here's how they're wealthy. They take your money and they essentially hand it out and they get a kickback. All this is done legally. No better example than Adam Schiff, of course. New report is out today. Adam Schiff has earmarked $10 million to various defense contractors. Why would Adam Schiff sign on to give $25 billion to some lady making pastries in Ukraine, all while ignoring you? Well, you see, that $10 million for defense contractors he's earmarked has a way of coming on back home. That way Adam Schiff can enjoy a nice standard of living his whole life. This is why these congressmen, Republican and Democrat, this is why they're all millionaires. They're millionaires because of legal bribery, which brings me perfectly to Kevin McCarthy in the current budget fight we're having.
Well, you have to keep the government open. I mean, if people want to close the government, it only makes them weaker. Why would they want to stop paying the troops or stop paying the border agents or the Coast Guard? I don't understand how that makes you stronger. I don't understand what point you're trying to make.
Yes, of course, it's always about the troops, isn't it? Hey, they want to stop paying the troops. Joining me now, great congressman from the state of Texas, Chip Roy. Chip, why do you want to stop paying the troops?
Well, Jesse, look, this is one of the things they pull out every single time that we have a shutdown fight, every single time. It won't just be the troops, right? They'll start talking about, you know, that we're pulling food out of the mouths of orphans. They'll start talking about not paying Border Patrol. They'll pull out all the stops because, you know, they ignore the reality that the government stays open almost entirely, that they'll deem most employees essential, that everybody's going to ultimately get paid, that yes, the real debate is whether or not there's going to be a delay in some folks' pay, which we don't take lightly. These are real. You know, in many cases, there are a lot of patriots, particularly our troops. But at the end of the day, right now, we have one leverage point to try to force this administration to stop screwing each and every American that's watching this right now, and you know it's true. And we've got to use this power to try to force change. What's happening at the border is completely unacceptable. What's happening at DOJ is unacceptable. What's happening at the Department of Defense in terms of being social engineering is unacceptable. So we've got to force change, and now's the moment. And I'm not going to listen to, you know, we should have passed bills in July. So don't whine about whether we're going to have a government shutdown. The question really simply is this: will Joe Biden choose to shut down the border or shut down the government? That ought to be the message of every Republican right now.
Chip, as it stands with the GOP, where are we with all this? I know where the commies are. I'm not worried about them. Where is the House GOP right now?
So you said it's important you gloss over, though, that point about the commies, right? And never before in the history of this country have we ever had such a deadlocked group of people, in this case, every single Democrat in the United States House, that is utterly unwilling to work with us to actually stop insanity with an executive branch trampling the rights of Americans. Never before. It has never been like this. Now we have Republicans who are basically having the actual fight, the actual debate. And look, if I'm being actually giving some grace here, getting 221 people, you got to keep 215, 16, 17 votes. That's not easy. I get it. But Democrats always find a way to do it. And it's about damn time the Republicans finally do it. And so the state of play is this. I wanted to move a very temporary 30-day funding mechanism that would have cut spending by 80%, secured the border, and made sure our defense was funded, but eliminated all the woke garbage, right? The critical race theory, the chief diversity officers, the transgender surgeries. We had a disagreement. Some of my colleagues thought, nope, no way, I'm not touching a CR. And you know what? I respect their position. We need to move appropriations bills. We're trying to move those. Over the weekend, I was meeting here. I was working. I was on the Rules Committee. We passed a package to move four bills. Hopefully tonight we will start that process. There's still some disagreement. For example, there's $300 million in the DOD package for Ukraine. I don't believe we ought to continue throwing money at Ukraine, but I'm more concerned about the $20 billion or $30 billion or $50 billion supplemental than $300 million that's been in there since we did an agreement with them to denuclearize in 1994. I would probably go forward, but I got some colleagues who very legitimately don't want to give another dollar to Ukraine. So I'm telling the speaker and the leadership, take it out. What the hell is the problem? Just get rid of it. Have a separate debate on Ukraine. Let's keep this simple. We're trying to make sure we move the border package through. We're trying to make sure we can get the train moving down the tracks and try to get to a place where we can send a loud message to the American people that we're for funding troops, we're for funding Border Patrol, but we're not for giving any money to this administration to continue to be at war with the American people. That's the truth. We need to stop it again. Let's make the message simple. Joe Biden can shut down the border, or Joe Biden can shut down the government.
Chip, can you explain the Ukraine insistence from people on our side? Regardless of wherever you fall on this vote, I understand that. But why are so many people on the right still so obsessed with this Russia-Ukraine thing? Not that I'm pro-Russia or pro-Ukraine or really care, but most American people do not care about this issue one way or the other. They don't care at all. And yet Republicans, like half the party, acts like this is the issue on everyone's mind. It's a really weird disconnect.
Justin, let me ask you a question. Do you think it is a coincidence that Zelensky was here this past week, right as we're figuring out how to fund our government, and that the last time he was here was last December, right before we were funding our government? Of course it's not a coincidence. How much do you think many of my Republican colleagues in particular, but both sides of the aisle, are more concerned about what the various lobbyists and defense complex people think in this town in order to continue the wheels of the defense machinery going, right? Because that's what it's all about. If you have perpetual conflict, you have perpetual contracts and perpetual, you know, defense spending. In my view, we need to get very simple here. What is in the interest of the American people? I've authored a number of letters with my friend J.D. Vance in the Senate to the Department of Defense, trying to hold them accountable. They say, hey, we have a full accounting of everything. Well, you know what? We have $31 billion. We don't even know where the hell it went. We sent a letter just yesterday saying to the Department of Defense, answer these questions. I want NATO to step up. I want an accounting of every dollar we've spent, and I want a mission of what we're trying to accomplish. Until I see those things, shut the hell up about Ukraine, secure the damn border, do your job, stop doing the bidding of a bunch of lobbyists in this godforsaken town. That's what we're dealing with right now.
Chip, shoot me straight about something. $33 trillion in debt, obviously you're well aware of it. It's something you talk about a lot. Nothing else really matters if we have this horrible debt crisis that ends our standard of living as we know it. Okay, we have this big budget talk right now. How many billions do these people get? And how many billions do these people get? Do any of these people, any of them besides you and like four others, ever bring up the fact that we're $33 trillion in debt and we're talking about paper money when it comes to every dime here?
Yeah, and what they do is they hide behind mandatory spending, hide behind Medicare, Social Security, frankly, a lot of now the veteran spending for burn pits. It's all mandatory. It's already just baked in. And they hide behind that and they say, guys, that's the only way we're really going to solve the debt crisis. To which I say, okay, where's your proposal? Where's your campaign? Where are you going out there and saying, you know what, I'm fine saying we're going to do an across-the-board cut to the entire government of 1% a year for the next decade, grow the economy, and get us out of debt. Can you do that? Oh, well, no. I don't want to talk about Social Security, Medicare. Okay, well, I'll tell you what I'm focusing on right now, since we don't have that on the table. We're trying to actually cut the weaponized bureaucracy that's killing the American people, killing our ability to prosper and grow, taking away our freedom, targeting Mark Houck in Philadelphia, targeting Scott Smith in Loudoun County, leaving our borders wide open for people to die from fentanyl. We're having an absolute crisis in this country where the American people can no longer have the American dream, and we're pissing around in this town worrying about things like legislating on appropriations and bullcrap that nobody understands. When we need to just stand up in the breach, stop spending money we don't have to fund a government that's at war with the American people. That is, in my opinion, what we need to do. Look, I will figure out how to compromise. I'll take an exit ramp to get the job done. But damn it, we got to actually be serious about it. And I don't want to hear any more finger pointing by the Speaker of the House or by, frankly, any of my colleagues on the left, right, or middle. Let's do our job. Stop funding a government at war with the American people. Secure the damn border now.
Yeah. Thank you, Congressman. Come back soon. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Jesse. Take care.
Our tax dollars are always used against us. It's amazing all the different ways our tax dollars are being used and have been used against us. And there's something about the Second Amendment. Your tax dollars, my tax dollars, being used to attack your rights. We'll talk about that in a moment. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I'm right. And so is Chip. And I'm right about this, too. I'm right that these big banks are horrible. And they give to horrible causes. And we give to the big banks. We do this with our big bank credit cards that we have. Oh, I love my big bank Visa card. And we just gave to Black Lives Matter with that sandwich we just bought for lunch. Did you do that today? Did you donate to Planned Parenthood? You might have. Switch your credit card to Coin. We've been waiting. We've been dying for something like this for ages. And finally, it's here. The credit card company that shares your values. When Coin gives, they give to organizations that share your values. And it's the same great card you're used to. Cash back, rewards, all the everything you're used to. Go to Coin, coign.com/Jesse, and sign up for your credit card. Dump the big bank credit card. Put your money where your morals are. Coin.com/Jesse. We'll be back.
Hey, everybody. So I have some big news to share. We are announcing the creation of the first ever White House Office of Gun Violence Prevention. So we're going to work on this together. We're going to continue to fight for reasonable gun safety laws and for the ability of all people to live their best lives free from fear, free from violence.
Free from fear and violence. I fear the government. The best gun safety laws are the ones that give me the same guns those criminals have. Joining me now, Maj Torrey. He is the founder of Black Guns Matter, actually out there doing the work, spreading the knowledge of guns. All right, Maj, a new gun office for the White House, obviously a political ploy. Everything these people do is political. I can't quite make out why, though. What are they gaining from this? Is this just an election year giveaway to the left? Is that all this is?
It's two things. One, there last year in June of 2022, the president signed the Safest Community Act. And in that Safest Community Act, he allocated $13 billion to hiring and supposedly going towards gun prevention, right? What he did was they partnered with this organization or nonprofit called the Community Justice Fund. This Community Justice Fund is a hodgepodge of folks from every town, Brady, so forth and so on. So this is just a way for them to put $13 billion towards the effort if they get reelected, to make sure that they're pushing the, kind of like what they did with the whole BLM thing, funnel that money through Act Blue. This is what they're doing to highlight and put forward candidates as well as young people and celebrities to galvanize to push for more red flag laws. That's all this situation is. They're a anti-gun organization with a $13 billion war chest.
Yeah, you know what bugs me about the red flag laws, Madge, is that it's so easy to talk normie norm and normie norma into them because they sound so innocent, right? Well, you don't want a crazy person to keep his gun. Of course the cops should go up and show up and just take his gun. Of course they should. It's hard to get the real truth across to norm and norma.
To explain it in a very layman's and laywoman's terms, red flag laws violate your due process. They violate your ability to see your accuser. They violate your, I don't want you just walking into my home, violate your property rights. Red flag laws are basically tantamount to, and this actually happened. We just had an ex-law enforcement officer use his position and say that his ex-wife was being aggressive to him and got her red flag and or sent into a mental institution. Now, obviously, it may not be all law enforcement doing this, but red flag laws basically violate so many constitutional principles. But if the general public isn't aware of these constitutional principles in the first place, of course they'll fall victim to the, you don't want the crazy person to have the firearm. You know, and I just challenge everybody to think back to maybe you've been called crazy for, I don't know, not wanting to wear a mask or close down your business, you know, maybe a few years ago. And if you can be identified as crazy for that, then law enforcement would have the ability to come into your home, take your firearms, and potentially take you without any due process. This is 100% unconstitutional, but they keep trying to push for it.
Crazy people. Do keep in mind when Maj references crazy people that 17-1, that's the ratio of Democrat to Republican psychiatry professors there are in America's colleges. Who do you think they think the crazy people are? Speaking of crazy people, here's Al Sharpton talking about taking your guns.
We're arming bigots. We're arming people that are not respectful of the United States citizen. All of these people are being armed by our lack of legislation.
Armed by a lack of legislation, Maj. Now, Al Sharpton giving the Democrat Party line is not something new. It's been that way for all 42 years of my existence. But they are getting bolder with this gun grab stuff, aren't they?
They're getting bolder because we're not financing the organizations doing the work. And I am going to do a shameless plug. Our work at Black Guns Matter goes into those areas where Democrats are strongholds, right? Where they try to convince young people, hey, you don't want to be a safe and responsible firearmist. We don't have to learn about the Second Amendment. That's only for white people, so forth and so on. And it's just not true. That class right there was in front of right where George Floyd was died. So my point here is, regardless of where we are on the political spectrum, anyone advocating for you to be unarmed, especially if you're, you know, a lot of my friends and family are on the left, if you think that systemically, you know, the entire country is racist, why would you not want to be armed against the so-called racist people? Regardless of where you land, these guys are there to propagate propaganda. Our work makes these classes free to all for anyone that wants to learn. We have about $280,000 more dollars left to raise for all of our classes for this year and next year and to buy our building outright. We do these classes for free. For anyone that wants to learn, givesendgo.com/solutionary. But saying this to say, be mindful of the political pundit that's advocating and telling you, especially black people, the Second Amendment isn't for you. We're arming such and such. If you're not buying guns and training people and giving them the firearm, you're not arming anyone. Al Sharpton is not arming anyone. Al Sharpton is having a conversation to scare people into the Democratic policy and democratic process, they're actually unarming people that would like to defend themselves from actual bigots, actual criminals, so forth and so on. I just lastly was down in Florida now. A few weeks ago, a weirdo, an actual racist, ran into a Dollar Tree, a Dollar General, and murdered people because they were black. But you know why the people in there didn't have a firearm? Because a lot of them were probably listening to the type of rhetoric that Al Sharpton is saying. So we got to get armed. Everybody, please support the classes. All of these classes are free to all because of voluntary donations. I mean, you guys are paying it forward, not free like socialism free. So givesendgo.com/solutionary. Donate whatever level you can.
Maj, appreciate you, brother. Keep doing what you do.
Thank you.
All right, we got a little debate preview with Sean Spicer next. Before we get to that, let's talk about guns really quickly here. If you carry a gun, I do. Oftentimes, you also have insurance with it. What is this insurance? I've owned it. It's the insurance that says, hey, if you have to use your weapon, we will cover any attorney fees you have. Most people get this. You're not stupid if you've done it. What you don't know, though, is these insurance companies will drop you. They're famous for it. Go look it up. They have these little clauses in there. Well, nah, I didn't like that shoot. Nah, we're not covering him. Sorry. They'll just drop you. Sorry. Thanks for the money. That's why you don't need that phony insurance. That's a gimmick. You need an attorney on retainer. That's what attorneys for freedom are. They're on retainer for you. An actual attorney, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. There's never a phone call. Sorry, we don't like the circumstances of that shoot. No, we're not covering him. It's your attorney. Here's what you're going to do. You're going to save $50 and you're going to go get a attorney on retainer at attorneysonretainer.us. Promo code Jesse saves you $50 when you sign up. Get an attorney and never think about it again, but get one and keep one, all right? We'll be back. Uh-oh, debate night is almost here. I was about to say here, but it's not here yet. We have to wait a day. Trump's not going to be there. Asa Hutchinson's not going to be there for obviously very different reasons. But joining me now to preview kind of this whole thing is Sean Spicer, who you can watch every single weeknight, Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern time, right here on the First TV. Okay, Sean, look, let's deal with the Trump thing first because nobody cares about Asa Hutchinson. It's a calculation to skip a debate. You don't gain points skipping a debate. You lose. It's just a matter of do you have acceptable losses? And Trump thinks skipping another debate is acceptable. What say you?
I think any consultant worth their salt that told him to go would be committing malpractice. Look, this is not an even race. I mean, you have at best one other person in double digits. He has twice been the nominee. He doesn't need to explain himself. I think it later in the process, if it becomes a one-on-one race, especially prior to the Iowa caucuses, then I might change my mind on this. But he has nothing to gain, and I don't think anything much to lose. So if you've seen the fallout from the last debate, basically Trump maintained, if not grew, his lead, and the rest of the folks rearranged the deck chairs. DeSantis lost a couple points. Nikki Haley might have picked up a point or two. Vivek Ramaswamy, same thing. Asa dropped off. But they're all fighting among their little pool there. They're not eating into Trump, and I think Trump realizes that, and it would be absolutely a mistake for him to go.
Sean, I find it interesting in that I agree with you on that campaign-wise, politically, from a cold-hearted campaign perspective, it would be a mistake to go. I do think this primary is so interesting in that you have hardcore Trump people who feel he is the only way forward, he is the obvious nominee, live or die, it's only Trump. And then you have the other people, and it's not an insignificant portion, no matter how big Trump's lead is, 40, 50 points, they don't want Trump anymore. They're done with it. And we're facing something interesting.
Right, but and if that works, if the sort of the challenger round works out, meaning if these guys fight it among themselves and come up with or narrow or winnow the field down to one of them taking on Trump, I'm not convinced my the advice that I was giving and the analysis that I was giving is based off the fact that it doesn't make sense for him to come. I think it would be entertaining as hell. I mean, I think he'd get up there and start making up nicknames for everybody. I would be entertained by that. I think we'd make some more news, get some great clips out of it. But at the end of the day, does it make sense for him to do it? And the answer is no. The other folks, frankly, if I was one of them, I don't want him there. I want to make it clear that I, you know, take the stage, make my case, make it clear why I'm the alternative to Trump. Look, when it comes down to the race itself, if you can't beat Trump in one of the early states or come out a damn close second, and I'm talking real close in Iowa or New Hampshire in particular, then this thing's over by Super Tuesday. Look, you think about the race right now, Jesse. Pence and DeSantis are all in Iowa, and they've made it very clear. So nothing short of a very close second works for there. Christie's all in New Hampshire, same thing there. And then you've got Haley and Scott, who are both from South Carolina. If you get your butt kicked in a state that you represented for over 10 years, you're not going to be the nominee. So the bottom line is that by the time South Carolina is over, either we're going to have somebody who becomes an acceptable alternative to make the case against Trump, or it's over. But those are the only two options that exist.
Do you think they go after Trump tomorrow night, Sean? They used kid gloves with Trump the first time. As you mentioned, he's still got this huge lead. In my opinion, you have to, no matter who you are, DeSantis, Vivek, even though he'd never touch Trump, but you have to go after Trump hard in this next one, do you not?
It's not a question of going after Trump hard. It's distinguishing yourself. If you pointed out, you know, you said a moment ago, and you're absolutely right, Trump's got this hardcore base. And so if you start talking about why Trump is bad and stupid and whatever else, no one's going to side with you. But I think if you can make the case why you're better than him. And so, for example, I would say, hey, look, Donald Trump did some great things. I want to carry on the America First legacy and the MAGA policies. You know, he is going to be distracted with a lot of stuff. Here's why I am the better person to carry that mantle, because I'm not going to be distracted by four different lawsuits and indictments. That's a very strong argument to make to Trump supporters, which is, I don't have a problem with his policies, maybe not even his style, but he won't have the bandwidth to do this, so let me do it on behalf of the movement. That to me is an effective strategy, but going after him as a person has largely proven ineffective.
Let's fast forward a bit, because Trump himself has three major battles. He has the primary, he has his legal battles, and then he has a general if he does win the primary. Everyone focuses on the first one right now, understandably so, but the other two kind of matter probably a bit more. How's he going to handle the money situation, Sean? I know you follow this stuff. He does not have the campaign money it takes to run for president while funding four different legal fights. He does not.
No, you just put your finger on it, Jesse. That's absolutely right. The bigger question is, I mean, in the case of, like, say, Ron DeSantis, where he's run through his campaign money quickly, his hard dollars, which we call in the political world, those are the money that you can raise up to $6,600 per person. His super PAC is very well funded. He had over $90 million. The point that you're making can't be underscored more. Trump is using that super PAC money to help pay the legal bills, not just of him, but all the supporters that are getting dragged into legal fights. And as someone who has seen one or two of these bills, they're not cheap. And so the president has gone out and made it clear that it's in his interest to keep these people in the tent, i.e. pay their legal bills. And I think, to your point, this is eating up a lot of money that would be used for ground game, that would be used for ads, et cetera, et cetera. And if he becomes the nominee, he's going to have to figure out a way to get big donors to come in and help do some things that they haven't been done before, which is almost a two-track system: run the campaign and help pay the legal expenses.
Yeah, I have a very difficult time imagining that amount of money being there. But I guess we'll find out how it's all going to work. How's Michigan going to be there for us, Sean? Trump won Michigan originally, yeah. And then we got our doors blown off, and then Gretchen Whitmer wins, and she blows off Tudor Dixon's doors. How do we win without Michigan?
So first, I just want to underscore the last point, because you're asking exactly the right question about money, and I think it can't be underscored. Most people are ignoring it. So it's kudos to you for making sure that you're drawing that issue out on the forefront. Michigan, Trump won in 2016 by 10,703 votes. It was 0.2%. He ended up losing Michigan by 2% in 2020. I think part of the reason that he is spending tomorrow, debate day, in Michigan is to further break that union vote. He got the highest union vote of any Republican candidate since Reagan last time, and I think he's leaking to expand that. When you have a race that's that close, as it was in Michigan, picking off another 1,000 or 2,000 or 3,000 votes is a big deal. So my guess is that part of the reason that he is there is to try to continue to drive a wedge between Joe Biden's policies and his ability to say, you guys, your entire livelihood is based on the viability of combustible engines and gas-powered cars, and I'm going to be your champion in the White House. This guy is going to sell you down the creek on electric vehicles with parts that are largely laid overseas and by non-union workers. So Trump gets it, which is, how do you take a state like Michigan and all the electoral votes? That's going to be one on the margins. The other thing that's important to point out about Michigan is this. Jill Stein in 2016 got 50,000 votes, 50,000 votes. And as I said, Trump only won the state by 10,703. In 2020, the Green Party candidate got 1,000 votes. So not only does Trump need to do better himself, but there needs to be a viable third party that is sucking up votes that don't want to vote for Joe Biden but won't vote for Trump. And that either comes in the vessel of Robert F. Kennedy becoming a candidate, or more importantly, what I think is the case, is Cornel West. If Cornel West can pick up 20, 30, 40,000 votes, that is definitely enough to deny Joe Biden the Michigan's electoral votes.
How comfortable are we assuming, well, assuming you're someone who's going to vote for the Republican nominee, I am, how comfortable are we with the Robert F. Kennedy nomination as an independent? That actually scares me the most. You just brought it up, Sean. If I'm looking at Joe Biden, I have Donald Trump, and I have Robert F. Kennedy. If I'm one of the millions of Americans very upset about this country's COVID response, I have one response, and it's not the Democrat or the Republican. I worry that costs the Republican the White House.
Yeah, as I said, I think Cornel West, who has now got the Green Party line, is the big one to watch. But you're absolutely right. I mean, Robert F. Kennedy, for a lot of people who might be more conservative Democrats or soft leaning Republicans, look at Kennedy and say, okay, I can vote for a Kennedy. Some people because of the name, and a lot of people because of what you just said on the COVID front, who believe that Kennedy is somebody that's going to take on the establishment, who through his work in the past is going to be a truth teller and not subject people to all these vaccine mandates. So I think that he actually would be probably more of a threat to Trump overall than he would be to Biden. For a lot of people, they're going to say, I can't vote for Donald Trump. I get to say I voted for a Kennedy and feel better about it.
Yeah, I agree. Sean, you were the best, man. His show's on 6 p.m. Eastern every single weeknight here on The First. Thank you, brother.
Thank you. You can also get it on Apple Podcasts, so appreciate that. Always great to be on the network with you.
Of course, brother. All right, we're not done yet. We have so much more. Was 2020 really the safest election in history? We haven't talked about that in a while. Let's discuss that. Before we discuss that, let's talk about health. Isn't that boring to talk about health? I hate talking about it. The wife loves talking about health. These vitamins and minerals, I hate talking about it, but I do know that it matters. I can't eat a double cheeseburger every single meal because there isn't nutrition. As delicious as it is, there's no nutrition in it. It's empty calories. That's what your dog is eating. When your dog eats dog food, he's eating double cheeseburgers. There's no nutrition in dog food. It's all dead. Your dog doesn't live as long as he should and doesn't live as well as he should because your dog doesn't get the nutrition your dog wants. Go give your dog Rough Greens. Pour it on your dog's food. The dog will love it. You will see such a difference in your dog and have your dog longer. Free bags. All you pay for is the shipping right now. Roughgreens.com/Jesse is where you get that free bag, or you can call them. 833-33-MY-DOG. We'll be back.
The reality is this was the most secure election we've ever had, and it was one of the most well-run elections we've ever had.
You know, a lot of this is just really a strategy to erode public confidence in what was a very well-run, secure election.
And you see in this case, we have the safest, most secure election in Michigan's history.
You know what transparency would be? Not lying to your constituents and not denying the simple facts that we had a safe and secure and free and fair election here in Pennsylvania.
Government and industry representatives from the election security community issued a joint statement reflecting a consensus perspective that the 2020 election was the most secure in U.S. history.
There's a consensus. The science is settled. Haven't you heard? Obviously, it's the safest and securest election ever. Joining me now, the great Mark Hemingway, senior writer at Real Clear Investigations. Mark, it was the safest and securest election and fairest election ever, except it was the election with the most mail-in ballots ever. And since mail-in ballots are the least secure way to run an election, I don't know, Mark, I'm just a stupid community college guy, but that doesn't seem to make any sense.
It's just absolute nonsense to go with the talking point that that absurd, the safest and most securest election ever. You know, it's one thing to argue that, you know, your opponents are overstating the problems of election integrity, but to say, make blatant things like that is like absolutely absurd. I mean, the media have done a complete about face on this issue of mail-in ballots. For instance, 10 years ago, the New York Times wrote a big story about how, you know, the increase in mail-in ballots was, you know, causing more concerns about security. You know, gosh, it was like 15 years ago or so, MIT and Caltech wrote a joint report on election security that, you know, one of their main recommendations was reducing mail-in balloting because it's more prone to fraud and doing more in-person voting. I mean, this is, you know, it's obvious common sense that, you know, the more you have loose ballots flying around, the more issues you're going to have with fraud.
Are we having issues with fraud, Mark? You just dug into a mayoral campaign in Connecticut. What did you see?
Well, this is a really crazy story, and you kind of have to unpack it a little bit. It starts in 2019. It involves the mayor of Bridgeport, Connecticut. Who's, you know, been mayor of that city for which is the largest city in Connecticut, 150,000 people, for, you know, several terms in a row. And in 2019, when he was running in the Democratic primary to be mayor, which is, you know, because it's a heavily Democratic city, that's effectively the election. There was all kinds of abnormalities with the absentee ballots, and this was reported on contemporaneously during, you know, 2019 when this mayoral primary was happening in September of 2019. And again, there's no Republicans involved in this. You know, this is, you know, one Democrat running against another Democrat. Well, immediately in September of 2019, the Connecticut State Elections Enforcement Commission immediately started investigating that election. And then, you know, we ran headlong into COVID, and that's what they're saying. It took them so long to do the investigation because they were delayed by COVID and other factors. But they didn't conclude anything about what happened in the 2019 mayoral election until the end of last, the August 30th of this year. So effectively 4 years later, they put out a report recommending that three people associated with the mayor of Bridgeport, Connecticut be given criminal charges for mishandling absentee and mail-in ballots. And wouldn't you know, there's another mayoral primary election for Democrats in the city of Bridgeport, Connecticut, 2 weeks after the report comes out, which is the middle of September, you know, just like 10 days ago, I believe, when the report was, or when the mayoral primary was. And wouldn't you know, the second mayoral primary in a row, there is questions about mail-in ballots. The challenger to the mayor of Bridgeport, Connecticut, was leading on election day. And the mail-in ballots came in 2-1 for the incumbent mayor. And he narrowly won by 200-some votes as a result of that. And shortly afterward, the police are investigating because his challenger released video that you just showed of someone associated with the mayor of Bridgeport, Connecticut, who's a city employee, apparently stuffing ballot boxes. It's really an amazing story. And again, I stress, no Republicans are involved here. This is Democrat on Democrat violence here, Democrat on Democrat fraud. And it's just, this appears to have happened two elections in a row.
Mark, you dig in all this stuff for a living. This is just, look, I don't want to sound too simplistic about it, but I was always taught this is simply how Democrats operate in these heavy Democrat strongholds. People know about, obviously, Chicago and New York and Tammany Hall and all those things, but if you have a Democrat stronghold, this is kind of just what they do, isn't it, Mark?
Well, you know, there's less evidence of this kind of, you know, corruption in recent decades. I mean, obviously, I think a lot of historians kind of accept that, for instance, the 1960 presidential election might well have been stolen by machine politics and, you know, possibly even the mob getting involved in that election, you know, to help push Kennedy over the top. But, you know, in recent years, obviously, as the media has gotten more partisan, there's less of a desire to look into this sort of thing and unpack this stuff. And like I said, it's, you know, interesting to me that this is coming out in Connecticut, you know, in this heavily Democratic city. You know, and it makes you wonder, you know, if there were a Republican involved, would Democrats be complaining about potential of fraud? You know, I'm not sure they would. I mean, a big problem we have when discussed, you know, election fraud is that, you know, they argue that, well, there's no convictions for this stuff, ergo, there's no mail fraud, there's no mail-in ballot fraud or anything happening. Well, that's kind of a logical fallacy. You know, the absence of evidence is not evidence of absence. There's just no incentive for heavily Democratic cities, you know, that are churning out votes in a statewide election to overcome Republicans, to dig into what people are doing that Democrats themselves benefit from. You know, if Democrats are committing fraud, that, you know, Democrats are benefiting from electorally, the Democratic officials that run those cities where the fraud is likely to occur have zero motive to investigate.
Mark, Pennsylvania is now registering voters when you go get a driver's license. It's been all over the news, automatic voter registration. Having known how Democrats run elections, I can see a million and one ways they're going to abuse this and we will not. What say you?
Well, I've actually done reporting on this exact issue. It was just a couple of years ago when they had some sort of motor voter law in Pennsylvania. And as a result of that automatic motor voter, you know, DMV, you go to the DMV, get a new driver's license, and they register you. There was already an incident some years ago where they had several thousand people automatically enrolled to vote that turns out were non-citizens or otherwise ineligible to vote in Pennsylvania. I mean, that was just a few years ago. So, I mean, I don't have a tremendous amount of confidence that this new law or whatever they're doing in Pennsylvania is going to be, you know, enforced in any sort of way that would, you know, be make sure that there aren't, you know, people out there that can be exploited and that, you know, shouldn't be voting.
Yeah, no doubt. Mark, thank you, brother. I appreciate it.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
All right. We have Light in the Mood next. Before we get to Light in the Mood, let's do something. Let's clean our homes together. You, me, we're just going to clean your home and my home. No, I'm not going to come dust or vacuum. I don't think you want that. We're going to get Eden Pure Thunderstorms and we're going to put them in our homes. You see, Eden Pure is called Thunderstorm because it does inside of your home what nature does after a thunderstorm. You know how you walk outside after a thunderstorm and it's so clean, the air is so clean, it smells so clean? You can have that in your home all the time. Eden Pure kills the viruses and mold in your air. It fixed my allergies. These things are miraculous. It will remove odors completely from your air. Not cover them up, remove them from your air. But it can't do any of that unless you buy some. You have to go to EdenPureDeals.com because they have a deal there. They have $200 off three packs. EdenPureDeals.com, code Jesse is how you get that $200 off. Go, clean your air. We'll be back. You know what's underrated? Driving construction equipment. As we get ready to lighten the mood here, did you know I grew up in construction? It's what my father did. It's what his father did before him. And when I was a kid, every now and then, when I went to go see Dad on the job site, he would let me drive some of the equipment around. And then as I got older and I started working construction, I would be forced to drive the equipment around. I had to drive this here and this there, and let me tell you something, it's awesome. All right, before we get to that in a minute, let's do this. You know what's not awesome? It's watching the value of your dollar just disappear. Like it's a little feather in your hand during a hurricane. It's just gone, right? Well, that's what we're watching right now. And it's only going to get worse because they've announced it's only going to get worse. All these people, they've announced their intention to continue their war on prosperity, on the dollar, on everything. So what do we do? Well, how do you fight back against that? Well, you get precious metals, things you can touch and feel. That's what you can rely on. What had value 1,000 years ago? That's what you buy today, because it'll have value 1,000 years from now. Oxford Gold handles all this for you. They'll get it in your retirement account. They'll get gold or silver coins delivered to your front door, which everybody needs right now. But they can't do any of that unless you call them. Call them. 833-995-GOLD. Tell them Jesse told you to call. They'll take good care of you, okay? All right. Construction equipment is fun, provided you stay awake. One, he's lucky to be alive. Two, Did you just cringe the whole time? Think about all that cleanup, always in so much trouble. All right, I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast.